The Dr. D Show is furnished by NeuroHealth LLC.
You're listening to The Dr. D Show about neuropsychology and well-being. Get the knowledge you must have to live a powerful, positive life. The Dr. D Show. Here for you.
Welcome, listeners, to the Dr. D Show. It is wonderful to have you with me. I am a forensic and clinical neuropsychologist, and this is a psychoeducational show designed for you to bring forward issues and topics of the brain, mental health, psychology, and in between. Today, the topic is going to be, we're going to cover medical problems and issues within the Black community or African-American population, and look to see what kind of medical conditions maybe have not been addressed enough in terms of science and research. What are the differences that we see? What are some of those medical conditions that are more unique to the population or are more prevalent in the population, and how those translate to brain health and overall health? I always like to say that medical conditions do not work in the body in isolation. More often than not, a particular medical condition impacts not just the particular area of the body, but eventually it impacts the immune system, heart functioning, and brain functioning. So we cannot isolate many times one thing from another. It's quite surprising for many patients and individuals to actually find out that a gastrointestinal condition, a stomach infection, can actually travel to the brain. And many times, if it's untreated, it will, in one form or another, be more likely to travel to the brain and actually impact the brain when it gets there. And so that's just one example of a type of medical condition you would think would not impact your brain, and it actually does. Another one that a lot of people don't realize, HPV, human papillomavirus virus, which is becoming more and more common in our population. Younger people are at a higher risk of developing this sexually transmitted disease. HPV is almost rampant now. There are many studies now that are coming out, enough studies that tell us to be very concerned about the impact of HPV on the brain. We do have some studies now that are showing that brain cancer was associated for individuals who were positive for HPV. That's just another example. So when you think about the brain, I want you to open your mind and think about the fact that your body, your body's processes do not work in isolation. They work together. And those processes take effect in multiple regions of your body and eventually areas of your brain. And so that's how I want you to think about brain health. Something important to understand is that certain populations are more likely to be susceptible for certain medical conditions than others. For example, certain populations are more sensitive to the metabolic activity or to the level of metabolic activity of sugar. Some populations tend to metabolize sugar better than others. And then some individuals specifically metabolize sugar better than others. For example, in my family, we don't metabolize sugar very well. One of the reasons that I know so much about sugar, in addition to the fact that it exacerbates, it is associated and exacerbates development of precancerous cells that eventually feed into cancer, but and also impacts the brain in terms of feeding tumors in the brain and a variety of other medical conditions. One of the reasons that I know about sugar is because sugar is very harmful to me and to many members of my family. I am extra cautious at the levels of sugar that I get exposed to, and I paid attention and invested some time, and you don't need to spend a lot of time on that, but you need to sit with a professional, a trained professional. I did this for myself, and I do this for my patients. Every single one of my patients, we talk about food because it impacts your brain and your overall health, is to really evaluate and review the levels of sugar that you intake throughout the day. And more. And sugar is only one, by the way, of those issues you would need to look at. But and more often than not, you will find out, wow, I didn't really realize how much intake of sugar I have. I didn't even realize these products I'm eating have sugar in them. So this is another discussion. But what it means is we're going to go into talking about how certain types of unique characteristics, medical characteristics of the African-American population, the black community have that put them at risk for developing certain medical conditions. Now, most professionals will agree with me that research is behind in this area. Okay, we become more and more knowledgeable about how certain populations are impacted medically because we just begin to study them more. But naturally, science and research was focusing for many years predominantly with the white population, predominantly with Caucasians. And naturally, what happens is we collected more data with this population. That's not just about medical conditions. That's also about how intelligence testing was developed, okay? IQ testing was also developed predominantly with the white population. Different cultures and different populations express knowledge and communicate knowledge in different ways. They also tend to be, certain populations tend to be putting emphasis on one type of human expression and development versus another. And there are plenty of studies that talk about that, how we have limitation with various limitations with our measures in the field of psychology and in the field of and in sciences in general as to what does this particular condition that I'm trying to measure look like in a minority population. And it doesn't have to be just African-American population. It also can be with Hispanic population. It also can be with Middle Easterns. I'm going to give you just one example that relates both to individuals who come from Middle Eastern background and the black community. There is a condition called G6PD. Okay, it's a particular condition, a sensitivity that a person may have that is at about higher percentage with Middle Easterns and with the black community. It's estimated to be about 10%, so 1 out of 10, which is a high number, by the way, in medical terms, with the African-American population. And why that's important to discuss that is because G6PD, when a person has the full-blown sensitivity to that or allergy, they can actually die if they get exposed to products that have G6PD impact on the body. What does that mean? There's all kinds of foods that contain in them a component that can trigger a severe and life-threatening allergic reaction to individuals who have G6PD, and they can actually die from it. Without getting tested, you wouldn't know that you have it. I'll give you, you know, a type of food, for example, fava beans. You wouldn't think that, you know, you could have fava beans in all kinds of foods. And in the Middle East, fava beans are used more common and even than the United States. Some individuals can actually die from it. Now, I have, my family's half Italian, half Yemen, so we all came out in different combinations. You know, I have a couple of siblings who came out with the G6PD allergy, and one of them has a child that came up positive for that. But I don't have it, and my kids don't have it. And my husband is European descended, so my kids have a whole combination going on. And but I get everyone tested because you never know who's going to end up having it. And as we know, with genetics, it's also a complicated area. We know that individuals traveled over time from one country to another, and sometimes we think we are more, our genetic makeup is more one way, and then we find out, no, maybe 60% of us or 30% of us or 50% of our genetic makeup is actually a different compound. So what's important to understand, going back to medical issues in the black community, G6PD is something that individuals need to be tested for because it's life-threatening. How many families actually know about it and take their kids to be tested? That's an interesting question, but it's something to think about. We're also going to talk about other conditions. One of the top conditions that I want to talk about is anemia. Anemia is about 3.3 times more common in blacks than whites. How many people actually know that? Why that's important? What is anemia and how does it affect the body and the brain and how over time it can affect our functioning? And I'm going to talk about conditions that actually affect children and affect children's learning in the school system, okay, in their education. There are medical conditions that impact the brain from a very young age, and make learning and processing information and paying attention and consequently succeeding, right? We always have to think about the consequences, make that process a lot more difficult for someone who has a medical condition that they have not been diagnosed for many years. I want to say that that became a very big issue when I was seeing individuals from all types of populations, and I have experience with poor populations, juvenile justice, prison, but I also have wealthier clientele, and you know, in Beverly Hills, Sherman Oaks, certain areas that are wealthier. I have a very nice variety, and I made myself actually gain experience in a quite wide variety of individuals coming from various socioeconomic status and culture as much as I could in order to understand better. And for me, like every other clinician, we always have a ton of room to grow. But it's important for clinicians in general to do this kind of work to understand that when they're seeing someone from a particular, potentially particularly different genetic makeup or a different culture, to immediately ask the questions, what are the things that I need to think about? What is the genetic issue that I'm seeing? What could they potentially be suffering from? What are the medical conditions that they have or that we may have not detected? And I'm going to tell you about a very interesting case today. And link all of those in order to make a sound decision clinically. With that in mind, I am Dr. D. Gaines, www.drdeegaines.com. You can call me with questions and concerns. I would love to hear from you here at KABC. And don't leave town. Stay with me. We will come back after the commercials.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented my pillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My pillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
For a limited time, go to MyPillow.com or call 800-324-0629 now. That's 800-324-0629 now, and use promo code KABC to take advantage of Mike's 4-pack special. You'll get 40% off 2 MyPillow premium pillows and 2 Go Anywhere pillows.
And now, Geico Saving Stories. Nikki Peasley was happily married to Scott. However, something between them changed after Scott spent 15 minutes on Geico.com.
Constant gifts, chocolates, flowers. Like he discovered a cash tree.
Cash tree, indeed. Unbeknownst to Nikki, Scott had saved hundreds of dollars on their car insurance by switching to Geico.
His gifts never stop.
Geico, spend 15 minutes and 15% or more in savings could be gifted to you.
Like the taste of fresh apples? Looking for something a little different? Try an Angry Orchard hard cider. We use traditional cider apples from a 100-year-old orchard. It takes 2 apples to make each bottle of Angry Orchard. So at the end of the day, relax and raise a glass to something a little unexpected. Angry Orchard. Crisp, refreshing, and not too sweet. And now in cans. Angry Orchard hard cider. Branch out.
Angry Orchard Cider Company. Walden, New York. Drink responsibly.
My name is Tom Thornton.
And my name is Cindy Thornton. We've been married 38 years, we're retired, and this is how we live united.
We play golf and we travel, but we also decided we were going to give to and volunteer with United Way at our community free health clinic.
I do the nursing at the clinic.
I work the front office, checking in patients, greeting them, making them feel comfortable.
United Way is how we contribute, because we know our time and money are going to the right places, the places that need it most and implement it best.
Judging by the thank yous we get at the clinic, I'd say we're doing the right thing with our retirement, too.
We even get a few bless yous. It's incredible.
We're Tom and Cindy Thornton. We volunteer at our community free health clinic, so we don't just wear the shirt.
We live it.
Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
My son Aiden has asthma. Secondhand smoke has triggered his asthma so badly, he ended up in the emergency room and spent multiple nights in intensive care. Now he's on a whole bunch of medications. My tip to you is, don't be shy about telling people not to smoke around your kids.
Half of U.S. kids are exposed to secondhand smoke. If you or someone you know wants help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.
KABC News. Winner of three prestigious Golden Mike Awards. Randy Wang, Best Sports Segment. Jim Rue, Best News Reporting. And the KABC News Team for Best Newscast Writing.
Yay, team!
We don't fake news. We break news and make news. 790-KABC.
Welcome back to the Dr. D Show. I am a forensic and clinical neuropsychologist on a mission to give you education about the brain, science, mental health, and how all of those interact and how they are affecting our life. With that in mind, we're talking about some differences with different populations and in terms of medical conditions and how those affect the brain. I'm talking today about the Black African community, African American community, and some of the medical conditions we see more prevalent in the community, and how we need to increase awareness, both in the public and in terms of research, increase studies that deal with those conditions in order to understand them better, so we can help a population of many to treat these conditions in due time. I began talking about anemia, and I'm going to go talking to about that. So anemia is a condition which the body does not have enough healthy red blood cells. Red blood cells are very important and essential for our human functioning in life because they provide oxygen to body tissues. There are many types of anemias and or anemia. Anemia can be a chronic disease and then eventually relate to various kinds of medical conditions. Why that's important to say that is because many times anemia goes undetected if it's lower level of anemia. And it doesn't have to be obviously just with the Black population. When anemia does create a sense of fatigue, lack of concentration, difficulty to operate throughout the day with enough energy. Because remember, what is it essentially? It's a condition that where the body really doesn't have enough healthy red blood cells. And why that's a problem is because those cells take the oxygen to the rest of our body, to our extremities, to our brain, to our heart, to every single organ in our body so it can function. And so when you don't have enough red blood cells, it's a major issue. So you just have to see how that connects and relates specifically to eventually having medical problems. Now, if anybody out there is listening to the show today and has questions about it, curious about it, or wants to share their own story, I really very much welcome calls from listeners. 1-800-222-5222. 1-800-222-5222. We would love to hear your story. Now, there are several chronic diseases that are associated with anemia. Certain cancers, examples are lymphomas and Hodgkin's disease. Various kinds of autoimmune diseases eventually can kick in. Long-term infections, liver disease, heart failure, chronic kidney disease, and other. So it's important to know that, again, as we say, anemia is directly linked to those medical conditions. Now, there is a very specific condition called sickle cell anemia, and you could either have the actual disease or you can have the traits of the sickle cell. The sickle cell trait is what we would call it. Now, it's important to understand that people that inherit one sickle cell gene and one normal gene have the sickle cell trait. It's classified as SCT. People with SCT usually don't have any of the symptoms of sickle cell disease, but they can pass on the trait. Now, you would think that they wouldn't have any symptoms, but interestingly enough, they do, and we're going to talk about that. Now, individuals who have the trait have one gene of sickle cell. And can pass it on to their children. People with sickle cell disease inherit two genes for the sickle hemoglobin, S from their parents. They have symptoms because their red blood cells do not make normal hemoglobin. Now, you would ask yourself, well, what are the symptoms? So first, we're going to talk about the symptoms of the disease, okay? And then we're going to talk about why the trait is important, because most people with sickle cell disease will be detected fairly quickly by the medical treatment team and be treated for that. But what happens with the individuals who have just the trait? What happens with them? Well, the most common signs and symptoms are linked to the anemia that the person is going through. Many people with sickle cell live with chronic pain, especially in their bones. Sudden pain can occur anywhere in the body and is also a common symptom of the disease. When the pain becomes very severe and sudden, and it really is unannounced, it's often been referred to as sickle cell crisis. And those crises affect many organs in the body. They affect the bones, the lungs, the abdomen, the joints. You can only imagine that living with chronic pain and living with the fact that you could just be attacked by any one of these crises at any given time is highly associated to what? Depression. Depression, an ongoing depression, and higher rates than the general population of suicidal thinking, suicidal ideation, and suicidal attempts. It is a serious problem. And in general, people who suffer with chronic pain, who are with an ongoing pain, struggle with higher levels of depression and suicidal ideation. Because, you know, for some of us who are blessed not to have ongoing pain, think about the times when you do have severe pain. How do you feel? How horrible do you feel, and how much you want it to end? Now think about a person who has that often, who goes through those episodes often, who can get so-called attacked by any one of those episodes often. What happens to your internal, emotional, psychological, mental health, resilience? What happens? Well, there is a decline, and there is a severe decline, and there's a challenge, a real difficulty for the mental health community to sustain, I like to call it contain, the emotional intensity and difficulty, and sustain the person at a level that keeps them safe. Okay? Real challenge. Some of the other symptoms that the person may go through: shortness of breath, dizziness, headaches, coldness in the hands and feet, pale skin due to anemia, chest pain, leg ulcers that may not heal, jaundice, yellow in the eyes and the skin, which is, you know, not very appealing, sometimes make them feel very embarrassed. So it's very important to understand that the first goal is to prevent or relieve the pain. The next goal is to prevent infections. There are much higher rate of developing infections, to prevent organ damage, and the higher rates of possible strokes in this community. So there's a lot of medical management that needs to be taken place. So we can clearly see that there's a lot of medical treatment that's needed. Now, what about sickle cell trait symptoms? Is there such a thing? What do we know about it? That's a very interesting thing. Well, so sickle cell trait, like we said, only have one of the genes that we would need to have in order to develop the actual disease. However, what we find out is that individuals who have just the trait may not be, first of all, identified by clinicians because they don't have the full-blown symptoms. So the fact that they're actually carrying the gene goes unnoticed, okay? The second issue is that there could be symptoms, and often there are. People who have that trait can have difficulty, and now I want to talk specifically about children because it impacts the way that they're learning, can have an impact on their body overall. They may experience increased fatigue. They may experience higher rates of depression. They may experience difficulty paying attention and concentrating on tasks. It has been found that children, students who carry the trait may experience those difficulties, which eventually translate to poor performance, may translate to poor performance in school. Now, if we don't identify that, if we don't actually get our loved ones tested, we don't know that they actually carry the trait. And it's also important to know that because when they plan to get married with someone, they may decide to do genetic testing, which, by the way, becomes something that's more and more common with a lot of populations. A lot of individuals we encourage to do genetic testing before people get married to find out if by any chance they're carrying, both individuals carry a particular gene that's related to a severe disorder. I will say that in the Jewish population, for example, especially in the European Ashkenazic line, there's about 40 major diseases that can be transferred to a baby and child, and some of those are so severe the infant may not survive very long. One of them is Tay-Sek disease, and in Israel, it is encouraged for many young people to get tested before they get married. Now, if an Ashkenazi person marries a Sephardi person, so in the Jewish population, you have Jews coming from Europe and Jews coming from Middle Eastern countries. For example, I mixed Italian and Yemen by intermarrying with a Middle Eastern descended Jew. Many Ashkenazic individuals actually eradicate the chance of developing or giving birth to a child with those 40 major diseases. So I always joke and say that the integration is healthy for us genetically. We create a better line, at least from a genetic perspective. With that in mind, we're going to go into a break. This is Dr. D. Gaines, clinical and forensic, the first neuropsychologist to bring neuropsychology and brain science to you for education. Don't leave town. Come back. There's a few other things I want to talk to you, including whether Trump should be diagnosed. Stay with me.
Why trust the parts pros at Advance Auto? Because if there's one thing they know, it's parts.
Thanks for calling Advance Auto Parts Batteries. Camber, how can I help?
I'm changing my oil and just want the best you got.
Oh, okay. You want to go with Castrol Full Synthetic.
Really?
It's going to keep your engine running.
Wow, you really know everything. White sneakers after Labor Day, yay or nay?
Advance Auto Parts. We know everything about auto parts. Now get 5 quarts of Castrol Edge Full Synthetic Motor Oil for just $27.99. While supplies last. See store for details. Also at participating CarQuest stores.
My name is David Hochberg of Pearl Mortgage. If you're looking to secure financing on a new home, give us a call. Jerry, income $55,000 a year, called to secure financing on a new home. Jerry was a little credit challenged, so we put him into our credit enhancement program and increased his scores over 60 points in 4 months. With a gift from Jerry's mother-in-law and a $9,000 closing cost credit from the seller, Jerry purchased a home 6 months after calling 844-YES-PEARL and happily celebrated Christmas with his wife and 2 kids in their new home. If you're renting or living in your parents' basement and would like to get pre-qualified for free, give us a call at 844-YES-PEARL or visit pearldavid.com to get pre-qualified for free. Pearl Mortgage has helped thousands of radio listeners, but we can't help if you don't call 844-937-7375 or visit perldavid.com. Pearl Mortgage Incorporated, NMLS 19186, California Borough Real Estate, 413-0865.
Hi, I'm Aaron Tippin. During my career in the music business, I met all kinds of people, made lots of really good friends. I know it can be hard to say no to your friends, but when it comes to drugs, there's no other way. Even prescription or over-the-counter drug abuse can prevent you from achieving your goals. So do yourself a favor when it comes to choosing whether or not to succumb to peer pressure. Say yes to a drug-free life. This message is brought to you by the United States Air Force.
This is Nnamdi Asamoah. I play football for the Philadelphia Eagles, but what I do off the field with United Way might be more important. I'm a volunteer tutor and mentor. Why? Because over 1 million kids a year drop out of school, and that's not okay. It takes 12 years to create a graduate, but it takes about the same time to create a dropout. And the difference between a child becoming one or the other could be me, or it could be you. Studies show that if we get to these kids earlier, their chances are better. and kids who read well by third grade are more likely to graduate. So join me in United Way. Suit up and take the pledge. Become a volunteer reader, tutor, or mentor. Because when a child succeeds, we all succeed. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge at unitedway.org. Brought to you by United Way, the Ad Council, and the National Football League.
Howdy, I'm Aaron Tippin. I've been blessed to be able to make a living at what I love, making music for more than 25 years. But it didn't get there overnight. There were a lot of long days and nights of working just to make ends meet. Good things in life don't always come easy, but when you sweat for what you want, it makes it even sweeter when you get it. So remember to work hard, and when the opportunities present themselves, you got to be ready to grab them. This message is brought to you by the United States Air Force.
How did you sleep last night? Did you have a restless mind, toss and turn, and wake up tired? I'm Sasha Stevens, renowned author and sleep therapist, and I'm here to tell you that deep, restful sleep is possible again. My own personal battle with insomnia led me to find the solution, and I've changed the lives of thousands with my revolutionary program, Sleep for Life. Sleep for Life is a powerful, effective way to transform the way you sleep safely and naturally without risky medication. It can alleviate tossing and turning and even chronic insomnia. I will help you fall asleep faster and stay asleep longer every single night. Go to sleepforlife.com now to start my audio program, risk-free for a full 30 days. I personally guarantee you'll experience better sleep after 30 days or it's free. Let me prove it to you. Go to sleepforlife.com for your risk-free trial. That's sleepforlife.com, sleepforlife.com.
KABC News, winner of three prestigious Golden Mike Awards, Jim Roop, best news reporting.
We all can't hold Donald Trump's feet to the fire.
Yeah.
Our best resource is our local representatives. That's why we hire them. That's what we pay them for.
We don't fake news. We break news and make news. 790 KABC.
Welcome back to the Dr. D Show. This is Dr. D Gaines, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, talking today to you about particular disorders and conditions that affect the African-American population more than other populations and areas that we need to continue and investigate in science. I'm also going to talk to you finally today about some interesting perspective I have about what I'm seeing happening in terms of the politics of this country and how it comes into play with professional psychology. Some thoughts that I have in terms of what I'm seeing is happening, requests that therapists and psychologists get to diagnose politicians. But before we touch on that spicy topic, I'm going to go back to what I'm talking about today, which is how a sickle cell trait affects blacks in our population. The trait affects 1 in 12 African-American people. So that's a very high number. And one of the problems that we have is many people don't get tested, so we don't actually know that they have it. But it's important to know that not just African-Americans get affected by that. It's also found among people who come from what we call the sub-Saharan Africa, the Western Hemisphere, South America also, the Caribbean, Central America, Saudi Arabia, India, and Mediterranean countries such as Turkey, Greece, and Italy. There's approximately 3 million people living in the United States with the sickle cell trait, and many are unaware of their status. And why that's so important, like I said, is because if you marry another person that has the trait, you are more likely to give birth to a child that has that, and then have to, that child obviously have to suffer from that condition. What's really interesting is that some individuals with the trait don't have symptoms, but some individuals that have the trait, like I said, do have symptoms. Most people with the traits do not have any symptoms, but in some rare cases, there are some complications where they can actually experience the similar episode that I talked about before, which is pain crises. And in some very extreme circumstances, they may even experience sudden death. We definitely need a lot more research to be conducted with sickle cell trait. And we need to understand that some of them suffer from increased pressure when they are in environments where there's lower oxygen. They may have more difficulty functioning in environments that require extreme physical strength. So you have to think about military, for example. I personally know of a close friend of mine who was in the military for a long time, did not know why he suffered severe physical crisis one time, and he was suffering from the trait, and then and symptoms that were coming along with these unannounced episodes of pain. Dehydration, more likely to experience that, and also specifically difficulty with high altitudes. So how does a person know if they have a sickle cell trait? There's a simple blood test that can be done to find it. So it doesn't take a lot. And a lot of times insurance companies will definitely pay for a portion of that. What's important is to know that as early as possible so you can get help for the condition. So you can be aware that you have this condition. And so what's very important is with children, if you know that your child has this condition, you may know why they're having more difficulty paying attention, concentrating, functioning in their environment. And know that not always the reason is the lack of will or interest to study, but really give them the help that they need. Maybe they need more time, you know. So there's what we call accommodations, okay? Learning environment accommodations that they can receive, more time in exams, flexible schedule, etc. Just even for the teacher to know that there is a medical problem that the person is dealing with sometimes solves half of the problem. You know, I was a teacher to children. I was so many things, including selling ice cream. I did pretty much a lot of kinds of jobs, but one of them for a certain period of time before I became a doctor, while I was going through college, through my bachelor degree, I was teaching in several schools. And being a teacher, I will tell you that, you know, teachers are not perfect, and teachers have to deal with a lot of children in the classroom. And, you know, it's natural that teachers will get irritated. They are human beings. They're going to get, not that I'm justifying it, but this is a reality, you know, whether we like it or not. Teachers get irritated with the students who show behaviors that interrupt the class and interrupt everyone else in the class. And so eventually what happens, a teacher will just, as a human being, you know, will be less patient, more irritated, less open to have a good relationship with a student that shows behaviors that make it difficult for the class to function. But if there is a medical condition that we don't know about, you know, just knowing about that medical condition can create more empathy and more interest in helping that child the right way rather than not, rather than labeling them. And gosh, are we quick to label in our society? This is like an instant labeling. And for some reason, and this is something that, you know, good people in the field, professionals, do not do. For some reason, we tend to focus on the deficits rather than the positive traits of a person. Everyone has deficits. Some people have deficits that are big enough to make a clinical significance. But even then, there are so many great things about so many individuals. You know, I was, for some period of time, evaluating individuals with severe mental disabilities. And I always made a point to myself, from my best mentors, to pay attention to the strengths. I had to find strengths in the person, or I could not make a good case for their treatment. And that's very important. Find the strengths. Whatever the problem is, you have to find the strengths in order to have a really good treatment plan for the person. And so same thing with school system. It's natural, and parents need to understand that parental involvement in the children's development and education, put in check what you're seeing, help the teacher do her or his job. Help them see some of the things about your kid they might not see. If they've got 30 kids in the class, they are not going to know everything about your kid or see things about your kid that are wonderful. Make them see your kid in a good light. Be your child's advocate. That's what I like to say. But I also don't say that for kids. Do it for your spouse. Do it for yourself. You're going to, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the oil. The squeaky wheel gets the oil. It's so much like that with doctors, with teachers, with anybody who's taking care of you. it doesn't mean you have to squeak all the time because then nobody likes you. But make sure that, you know, you squeak enough so people can hear you, so they can see what's going on with you. And just do it in a respectful and a nice manner. And you can get a lot more done, often than not. Now, one thing that I want to touch on, you know, we don't have a lot of time. Are we going into another break or do we have 2 minutes and then we're going into another break? And then do I come back? I come back, right? Yes, I come back. Okay, good. So, you know, my fun conversation about Trump is going to be at the end after this next break that we're going to have. But it is not that fun, but I think it is interesting and it's important to address, actually. So I want to touch about just a couple of more things that I didn't touch on in terms of certain medical conditions. When we think about certain types of other conditions that are more prevalent in the Black community, you know, we touched on anemia, we touched on sickle cell, we touched a little bit about G6PD, which I want you to research and look at. But I also want to touch on the higher rates of suicidal behavior for African Americans. Interestingly enough, and it's so unfortunate, there are higher rates. Studies do show that there's higher rates reports of suicidal ideation and potentially suicidal behavior in the African American population. And one thing that I think is very important to understand, to really understand why this behavior exists, we need to understand that in multiple levels. We need to see, well, what are the problems that contribute to the increase of suicidal behavior? When individuals start displaying suicidal thinking, it is because they are in a state of crisis. They are in a state where they feel there is no other way out. What suicide really is, it's sort of like an option that comes up in our mind when we can't find any other solution to our problems. And our problems are so painful, they're so big, we feel that we cannot manage them, that we feel the only way out would be to commit suicide. So it's important to understand that suicidal thinking is not necessarily abnormal. It's sort of like one of those reactions that we have, cognitive reactions that we have to a crisis where we feel there is no way out. Why am I saying that's important to understand? Is because studies also show that when you are there for someone who is suicidal, when you are there for them, there is much less of a chance that they're going to eventually commit suicide. Many times they need somebody to hear them. Just hear them out. Be there for them. Make them feel like there's going to be a tomorrow and there's going to be a solution. There's going to be something that's going to be done. And what's important to understand is that research does show that many times when a person was prevented from committing suicide, they were thankful down the line that that it wasn't successful. So it tells you really how to save a life. You know, that's one of my favorite songs. Where did I go wrong? I lost a friend. I wasn't there for them in the time that they really needed. Sometimes it only takes a few words. Sometimes it takes to just hear a human voice. Sometimes it takes you know, on my Facebook, I circulated this video that I love where you see a rescue team came to talk to a man who was planning to commit suicide over a bridge. And eventually the way that one of the team people made a connection with him was simply to talk about sports team, you know, about which team he thinks is going to win or something like that next. And they made that human connection. That was a human, basic human connection. And that's all it takes sometimes to get somebody to come back to you from that very low place. I think understanding life in the grand scheme of things, part of what I learned in my job is no matter how much money you have and how famous you are and how much success you have and how much education you have, and that's all the kinds of patients that I have. I have everything. I have doctors who are patients of mine. I have, you know, famous individuals, or you would say, you know, individuals of stature, you know, they have the same problems that we have. Sometimes they have even bigger problems because there are other pressures. There are other stress that they have in their life. There's complicated family dynamics. Money gets involved. You know, lack of privacy. There's all kinds of things we don't think about that come with fame because we almost do not personify these people in terms of being human as possibly being vulnerable to the human condition. We only personify them for what we would like to personify them for. We sort of prostitute them, right, to our own needs and thoughts and desires. But those individuals have very, very real and valid problems, just like everyone else. And so what's important to understand is that it's the human connection that makes therapy powerful, that makes medical treatment powerful, above and beyond all of our other more superficial differences that I call. But going back to our topic, you know, I want to basically talk about one more important topic today before I get to this, to summarize this issue. So we talk about suicidal behavior of the African-American population, and we don't understand it well. Here's the bottom line. We don't understand it well. Some studies may say it's linked to lower socioeconomic status. Sometimes it links to communal pressure. Sometimes some people may say, or professionals may say, that it's linked to difficult family dynamics, maybe higher rates of single parent household. There's just so many reasons that it could be. But I also want to challenge that it also may be linked to medical conditions that individuals go through. Now, you know, there are specific seven deadly diseases that strike blacks the most, and it's important to know what these are. And here is why I'm saying the bottom line that we need to do better research with the community. Diabetes is 60% more common in black Americans than in white Americans. Blacks are up to 2.5 times more likely to suffer a limb amputation and up to 5.6 times more likely to suffer kidney disease than other people with diabetes. So you're talking about severe physical implications. African Americans are 3 times more likely to die off of asthma than white Americans. Is it that they're not getting treatment in time? Is it that they do not have preventative care well enough in time? Deaths from lung scarring are 16 times, guys, more common among blacks than among whites. The disease recently killed former NFL star Reggie White at the age of 43. So what do we know about that? Oh, gosh, relatively very little. Despite the lower use of tobacco exposure society-wise, still African-American men are 50% more likely than white men to get lung cancer. Strokes kills 4 times more 35 to 55 to 54-year-old black Americans than white Americans. Blacks have nearly twice the first-time stroke risk of whites. These are really high rates. African-Americans develop high blood pressure earlier in life, tend to, with much higher blood pressure levels than whites. Nearly 42% of black men and more than 45% of black women age 20 and older have high blood pressure. And cancer treatment is may be equally successful for all races, but black men have 40% higher cancer death rate than white men. So we really just don't understand that. But one hypothesis is that the genes can play a role. Another one is that the environment that individuals live in, socioeconomic status, maybe also racism, maybe how a patient comes through the door, maybe we treat them differently because they're African-American. That can happen too. Maybe it's because African-Americans may communicate their medical problems less to their physician or provider. They may be more resistant to come to treatment to begin with. And we know, by the way, that there's a lot of cultures that individuals are more skeptical of the medical community, skeptical of the doctor. I have, just a couple of months ago, had a Hispanic patient. She's very traditional Hispanic, knows very little English. She refused to come in to get help, to be to be diagnosed. And from all the symptoms, it looks like she was having dementia at moderate stages. She really needed the help and care. And I finally picked up the phone when I saw that my assistant couldn't get the scheduling done and the daughter couldn't get it done. And I went on the phone and I talked to her straightforward and I said, "Ma'am, this is the doctor. I really want to meet you. I really hope you can come in. I really want to see you. Let's just talk about it. I promise we will not do anything you do not want to do, but let's come in and talk about it together." And she came in and we ended up having a great relationship. And it was just that human connection and probably, you know, respect and, you know, that she could feel, you know what, maybe I can trust this doctor. Maybe I can tell her what's going on. But so many individuals, there's so many cultures that we don't do that. So with that in mind, I want you to think about that. Now I'm wrapping up this topic because there's one more thing that I want to talk to you about. And that is this interesting communication that I'm finding that's going on, and that's going to be my bottom line for today. You know, a lot of psychologists are being approached, a lot of doctors are being approached by higher level individuals many times, or media stations and networks, to diagnose our current president. And before the elections were completed, we were asked, I was asked several times to diagnose both Hillary and Trump. And you know, the only thing I did do is do an episode talking about some of the psychology that's going on out there with political trends. But one thing I would not do is diagnose either one of them. And here is why. Should professionals diagnose professionals in higher positions without treating them? And if you treat them, then you have patient-doctor confidentiality. You definitely shouldn't be diagnosing them. But here's my two cents. You know, I refuse to do that because of fundamental problems we have with such a task. Here are some of the problems that I see. More and more, the media leaves no room for professionalism and unbiased perspectives and wants to utilize what I would call even prostitute our profession to gain political power and install hate and division. I find it harmful to a profession where we need to treat any person with the same unbiased perspective and respect. We need to remember that about half of our population is likely to have voted for one person or another, and they're going to come to the clinic. So what are we going to do? We're going to diagnose 50% of our patients with a mental disorder because they voted for the person we did not vote for? Obviously, clearly, not 50% of the country is mentally ill, racist, or anything else. So clearly, this is ridiculous. Now, some of the problems that I see with that, off the bat, diagnosis is a serious business. The proper professional process is face-to-face evaluation, administration of normed measures that were designed to collect that information, collecting vital information such as medical records and interviews. Clearly, none of these things are going to take place when you need to diagnose President so-and-so or his wife. And so how real, how accurate, and how responsible is that? Not very. In addition, diagnosing someone without proper process can raise issues of libel. It can be harmful to them professionally. What are you basing your diagnosis on? Media videos and media clips? That is a very dangerous legal adventure that I don't think any professional should take. Now, how is the information going to be used? You have to think about that. Who are you influencing? Why are you influencing them? What does it say about professional standards? And what does it say about your own biases? And with that in mind, I'm going to leave you to think about this, how ridiculous that could be. This is Dr. D. Gaines, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist. This is a psychoeducational show not meant to replace professional mental health advice or therapy. With that in mind, you can learn more about me and also help contribute this show. If you want to sponsor this show, please help. www.drdeegaines.com. www.drdeegaines.com. With that in mind, wishing you all a healthy, beautiful, informed, powerful, and inspirational week. Be well.
You're listening to The Dr. D Show about neuropsychology and well-being. Get the knowledge you must have to live a powerful, positive life. The Dr. D Show. Here for you.